Thanks for listening to this podcast of APA Compass, the Pacific Northwest's only Asian Pacific American public affairs radio program. APA Compass is downloadable at kboo.fm/APA Compass. You're listening to APA Compass on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. I'm Sarika Mehta. Today I'm chatting with documentary filmmaker and professor of women's studies, Patty Duncan. Patty's current research focuses on the long-term effects of militarism and war on women in Asia and the Pacific. She is author of the book, Tell the Silence, Asian American Women Writers and the Politics of Speech. Patty is also a member of the APA Compass Collective. Academia is not the only part of her life. She wrote and produced the documentary, Finding Face, with her partner Skye Fitzgerald. This film explores acid violence against women in Cambodia as a gendered form of violence, specifically the story of Tet Marina. This film has been featured at a number of festivals and won the award for Best Film at the Astoria International Film Festival, as well as Best Documentary Feature at the San Diego Asian Film Festival last year. The viewership of this film has just reached 30 million people across public television in the U.S. alone. Welcome back to the show, Patty.
Thanks, Rika. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. For our listeners who are a little unfamiliar, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, so I'm at Oregon State University, and I had the opportunity to, and I also wrote the script for film. So some of my research focuses on issues of militarism and war on women in Asia and the Pacific, and I became interested in these issues quite a while ago, stemming from learning about my mother's history and some of the experiences that she had as a woman growing up in South Korea, living and working near U.S. soldiers were stationed. And my father actually was in the U.S. military and was stationed in South Korea. That's where they met. And I was very interested in learning about their history and the social, political, economic context that shaped this relationship between the U.S. and South Korea and continues to really shape the experiences of women in Korea.
It's a really fascinating history, and we'll definitely talk more about that after a bit. I guess we'll switch to your film. Tell me about Tet Marina and how you learned about her.
Tet Marina is a woman living on the East Coast in the U.S. today. When she was a teenager in Cambodia, she was discovered by karaoke music producers when she was pretty young. And she quickly became kind of a rising star in the karaoke music scene in Cambodia. And so she was acting in music videos and was sort of becoming recognized across the country. And when she was 15 years old, she was coerced into a relationship with a man named Sai Sita, who was the Undersecretary of State for Cambodia. And it quickly turned into a fairly abusive relationship that she tried to leave several times and could not because of the threats made against her and members of her family. So in 1999, when she was only 16 years old, she was brutally attacked with acid by Sai Sita's wife, Khun Sokhal, in a very public marketplace in Phnom Penh. She was disfigured in this attack, and nothing was ever done to her attackers.
When you say nothing, there was no police intervention? Nothing was brought to courts?
Yeah, nothing was brought to court. The arrest warrant somehow disappeared. Even though there were hundreds of witnesses, everybody knew who had perpetrated the attack against Tet Marina. Because of the status, nothing was done to basically hold her accountable for this attack. And so this impunity surrounding Tet Marina's attack, many human rights workers have suggested, led to a number of copycat attacks. Because people started seeing that one could get away with throwing acid in that context if the perpetrator had more power than the victim. So in the year following Marina's attack, there were numerous documented attacks.
This is a really incredible and sad story. At what point did you decide to develop her story and make this film?
Well, it was several years ago that we started working on this film with Sky Fitzgerald, who has a lot more filmmaking experience than I do. We were in Cambodia, and we started learning about the issue of acid violence. I had done some research. We were thinking of doing kind of a short film that would be a useful resource that local human rights workers, local organizers could use, because we felt that we had the time and the resources at that time to make kind of a short piece that could address this issue, which we were told repeatedly needed more visibility, more awareness. So we started doing interviews with survivors of acid attacks and working to organize against it, human rights workers, medical professionals, social services people as well. What we found was that almost everyone we spoke with mentioned the case of Tet Marina. And everyone just kept referring to Tet Marina's story because it was kind of a turning point in national consciousness around impunity and acid violence and women and gender. The more that we learned, the more we started to think, well, we need to incorporate the story of Marina. So when we came back to the U.S., I had learned a little bit about her story. I knew that she had been granted juvenile asylum to enter the U.S. after her attack, and that she'd been treated at the Shriners Children's Hospital in Boston for the burns on her face and body, because she was burned over, I think, about 40% of her body. So we found Marina, and we started a conversation with her about what we were doing. At first, she did not want to be involved in it. It turned out that she feared retaliation. She was also afraid for her family members still in Cambodia at the time. So, you know, she wasn't really that interested in participating in a film about this. So we considered just scrapping the whole project, because it seems like it would be a hard film, a hard issue to make a film about if we didn't include her story, but we don't want to in any danger or if it would make her uncomfortable. So we were kind of trying to figure out what to do at that point. A few weeks later, she wanted to meet and she wanted to do this film.
That's incredible. And she contacted you again.
Yeah. She reached out. She'd been thinking about it. And this really shattered her. It disfigured her. She had to leave her family, her country, her culture. You know, she ended up in the U.S. very, very isolated and lonely for quite a while, and had to learn a new language, had to learn to live with a different face after, you know, undergoing more than 25 surgeries. So we knew that she'd been through hell, and we certainly didn't make that any more difficult for her. And so we were thinking, you know, maybe we just won't do this project. And then she called us. She wanted the world to know what happened. She also felt that if there was any way that her speaking out against the injustice of acid violence to stop future attacks, that she wanted to try to do that. So we made arrangements to go to the East Coast and to meet her right away. And that was the beginning of the relationship that we've had with her for the last several years of getting to know her. And then we started producing the film in collaboration with her and with her older brother, Sekwondo, who was instrumental in getting her to the U.S. for medical treatment.
This was such an involved project. I imagine there were many difficult points for all of you involved in making this film. What do you feel was the most difficult point for you?
Oh, it was difficult trying to shape the story of Marina's experience and to shape the story, I guess, the larger story of the issue of acid violence against women, the way that she would want her story told, you know. But we were also concerned about shaping a story that would not put her in any danger or her family members in any danger. We also felt that this not simply tell a story of survivors as victims, but as incredibly strong individuals who, in Marina's case, have an amazing analysis of the social issues surrounding acid attacks and, you know, have been able to forward through the work to stop acid violence.
That is really brave of her, of all of you, really. How has the response of your film been from Cambodia?
Quite a lot of response, actually. We know that the film has been made available in the so-called black market.
That is to be expected in some
parts
of the world.
we're thrilled about, because, I mean, we actually hoped it happened, and we've been told by friends who have been to Russia in Phnom Penh, which is like a big public market, that copies are widely available there and sellable and accessible to people in Cambodia. Many people across the country, they knew about Marina's story and wondered what happened to her. There was a lot of curiosity. I think that as of late, we feel that there's been a lot of public support within Cambodia, at the same time that there's been some anxiety or anger from the government about this issue. And we've also done a lot of work with Marina so that her family members in Cambodia were able to leave the country before this film was released.
For those of you who are just tuning in, you're listening to APA Compass on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. I'm chatting with documentary filmmaker and professor of women's studies, Patty Duncan. You mentioned before that you've been asked to not return back to Cambodia. Have there been any developments with the government intervening with violence against women or even an international response? Cambodia is not the only country that partakes in this kind of violence.
So it seems that there have been some interest in the film outside of the U.S. It's been shown on public television, national television in Australia, in Denmark, and in Poland. It's been shown at film festivals outside of the U.S. It premiered in Switzerland at the International Film Festival and Forum for Human Rights. And so we hope that it's having some kind of impact across the world, of course.
I think you're saying that it's like one drop in the bucket, except actually it's more like 30 million in our country alone.
Well, I hope, last year there was a law drafted against acid attacks, and that was the first law to be drafted to actually explicitly name acid attacks. And we're waiting, I think, to see what's going to happen. I need to learn more about how that is shaping up. But I think interesting that there has been a lot more attention and awareness around the issue of acid violence. I don't want to suggest that that's simply about our film. I think it's also about the amazing work that local organizers and activists have been doing for quite a long time there.
That's really great. That's a huge step forward. And definitely we'll all stay tuned to see what happens with that drafted law. I just want to switch gears a little bit, specifically to Tet Marina. We've learned about her past. How is she doing now? What is her current story?
Her current story is that she had another child recently. She is doing well, and really happy. I think that she's doing a lot better than she was in the past. And I think speaking out against this issue and also being recognized by people as someone who is working in justice has been very important for her.
That's fantastic news. What was it like for Marina and her family to watch the film?
Oh, I think it was very hard. I think that it was probably really difficult for Marina to watch the film. We set up a private screening, the version that we had been working on, to Marina and her brother, Secundo, to be able to watch it alone with us, to be able to talk about it or ask questions, tell us if there were cases of it that they didn't want included or they didn't feel were accurate. So that was a very hard experience. She is one of the most courageous people I've ever encountered.
What was it like for you watching the film in the audience at your first festival?
That was in Geneva at the International Film Festival and Forum for Human Rights. And I was very, very nervous and excited. At that time, we had been working with several organizations and individuals to try to ensure the safety of Marina's family before the film showed. So I was thinking about them more than the screening, and thinking about, you know, the impact for Marina and for her family members, and thinking that everything was just about to change because for so many years she had felt very silenced, and here she was putting her story out there. So it was exciting and terrifying at the same time.
I can't imagine it would be anything else.
Yeah.
I'd like to spend a couple of questions talking about you. Several years ago, you went to South Korea to research women and militarized prostitution. As a Korean-American woman, how was this experience?
Sure. That was a really interesting experience for me. I'm a mixed-race Korean-American woman, and I, you know, my mother is Korean. My father is a white American who had been in South Korea as part of the military occupation. And I really wanted to understand that history. I wanted to know what the power relations were, and how those processes were shaped and what kind of impact they continued to have. It was surprisingly difficult to be mixed race in Korea, and it is for people there who are mixed race or identify as multiracial or Asian. And I guess I didn't really understand until I was there just how discriminated against mixed race people are, and that it's really deeply rooted in the people are the children of Korean women who were prostitutes and who had these children with U.S. servicemen. So that idea persists, and it raises feelings of shame and anger in anti-American Koreans. It was definitely eye-opening. It was difficult, but I also want to acknowledge I was there with a lot of privilege as someone who speaks English, as an academic, and that was, I think, really different. Even though I was discriminated against as a mixed-race person, I know that it wasn't the same as some of the people I encountered who lived their whole lives in mixed-race people. Actually, one topic that I've been thinking about for years would be about the politics of mixed-race Asian Pacific Americans, historical social forces that have shaped our experiences. At this moment, though, I'm kind of adjusting to motherhood and being back at work and, you know, kind of taking on multiple projects right now. But definitely I would love to work on another film. And it was just an incredible experience.
It sounds like it, and we definitely look forward to more films, even if they're in the far future, while you're adjusting to motherhood, which is a pretty big deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Patty, thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy week to chat with me.
Thank you. Sorry, Jess.
You're listening to APA Compass on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. I've been chatting with Patty Duncan, writer and producer of the documentary film Finding Face. You can learn more about the film at findingface.org. A podcast of this interview can be found after this broadcast on our website at kboo.fm/APA Compass.